I told you that I want to go to that festival in Sweden.
No, you said it would be cool to go.
Yeah, and then I got the opportunity and I decided
to do
it.
I don't mind you going. I just wish you would have told me, that's all.
Dude, she needs a therapist. You've been wanting out of this stupid relationship for like a year now.
And don't forget about all of the beautiful Swedish women you'll meet in June.
Okay, guys.
That's not her again. Seriously?
Babe, what's happening? Danny.
I was so very sorry to hear about what happened.
I'm sorry.
I invited Danny to come to Sweden.
You know what she's been going through?
Christian says you've got this special week planned.
It's sort of a crazy festival. Special ceremonies and dressing up.
That sounds fun.
Unbelievable.
Welcome and happy midsummer. Skål!
What time is it?
9 p.m.
That can't be right. The sky is blue.
This is what 9 p.m. is like here.
How long have you two been together?
Just over 3.5 years.
4 years.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's like another world.
Tomorrow's a big day.
Is it scary?
What is it?
It has special properties.
What am I going through?
We just need to acclimate.
I don't want to acclimate. I want to go.
Absolutely not.
What's happening?
I don't know why you invited us.
That's why you look so guilty right now, because you know.
We only do this every 90 years.
I was most excited for you to come.
I did it. I watched Midsummer the night it came out. Previously, I told you that so many movies come and go, make it out of the theater before I can make it in. And my goal was to hit Midsummer the first night it came out. And I did it. Yes, yes. Small victories. Well, I'm here to tell you all about the film, so obviously, there's going to be heavy, heavy plot spoilers. So if you wanted to watch this movie, I'm going to warn you now. I'm going to give it all away. So I would advise to go watch it and come back. I advise that heavily. Was it a good film? Yes. Yes, it was. It was really good. I enjoyed it. Much like Ari Aster's first film, Hereditary. Which I did a whole show on that you can check out. When did I do that? I don't know, about a year ago. And that is why I was excited to see this for two reasons. One, Hereditary was such a good film. I dare say, maybe the greatest horror film of all time. Maybe, I don't know. Not great in the sense that it's got a replay value. It was just like, it left you with a feeling of dread and a pit in your stomach. And it's amazing that they could do that. And plus, like, the subject matter of Hereditary was of great interest to me. I don't want to spoil the plot on that, so check it out if you haven't. But that was part of the reason I was very intrigued to see Midsummer. Which, from the trailer, you could tell it had all the things we talk about. All the ritual stuff, the Illuminate confirm, the pagan holidays. And as you listen to my Wicker Man analysis a couple months ago, I'm very interested in the folk horror elements. Wicker Man might be the greatest horror movie of all time, right next to Hereditary. But yeah, so Wicker Man, you can check that analysis out as well. I actually did it based on the movie and the book it was based on called Ritual. And we're going to talk about how those connect in with Ari Aster's new film Midsummer. So, again, this is your final warning. Turn back now and come back later. But if not, I'll try to piece the story together enough for you. You can kind of get what's going on by the trailer, to be honest. But here we go. Now this film, and of course I did a post on this. I wrote an article on it the night I came home. I'm gonna read mostly from it, okay? So you can join along. I'm gonna go deeper into certain areas than I wrote about. Now the film, it did not disappoint. Because I believe Ari Aster is redefining horror films. He's giving it this new element, which I find very, very interesting. He's playing on old occult ideas. The old religion is the new religion, right? It's not blatant gore for the sake of a body count anymore for him, which I really enjoy. He has more sort of sparingly few deaths, but when they happen, you can't shake it out of your head. Which is why I won't watch Hereditary again. It's just, the imagery was so dark. I think Hereditary was better than Midsommar. Maybe, I don't know. Let me give it some time to marinate. But we're not here to give you my thumbs up or thumbs down. We're here to talk about the Illuminati symbolism of the occult. First, let's get into the pagan folk horror. The deaths scenes on this resonate harder than previous horror films, because I've watched horror films, many of them, right, all the way back to the 60s. I like a lot of like the Fulci, Argento sort of 70s Italian horror. I like that. I like 80s slashers, and the newer horror movies, they don't really interest me much. They're kind of garbage, I think. But like the deaths in this movie, they resonate harder than your Friday the 13th with Jason Voorhees slamming a kid up against the tree with the inside the sleeping bag, and don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from Jason Voorhees slamming a kid up with inside of a sleeping bag, but they're more laughable, right? Whereas in this movie, Midsommar, I mean, you cringe, you turn away from the screen, you're like, good night. There's a sledge-o-matic scene. There's these visuals you get of a woman with the exhaust hose taped to her mouth to commit suicide. I mean, like, good night. You can't shake those images out of your head. You really can't. Now, this film is very obvious in telling us that this is about a pagan ritual. It's about this little village, this community in Sweden, holding a midsummer festival, which incorporates the generative forces of nature, like your typical pagan folk horror movie should. And we see the symbolism of the maypole fashioned up as the cross. And this is one of many Christian references in the film, because as you'll find out by the end of this analysis, that's what it's all about. It's always about religion. When I started this journey of conspiracy theorizing, I hated that all the theorists took it to religion. But I think they're right. Turns out, I think it's what it's all about. It's about supplanting Christianity, the false doctrine, the heretical doctrine, with the true God, Lucifer. Now, traditionally, this maypole, because I know you're thinking, Isaac, the maypole? But the festivities happen in June or July. I believe it's June, right? Because the solstice is in June, June 20th, 21st. But in the movie, you'll hear some dialogue and they're confused as whether it's June or July, but it doesn't matter. Now, the maypole is typically erected, no pun intended, on May 1st for May Day, right? Valpurgis night. But in the Scandinavian cultures, they pushed it back to the solstice which means sun stop, right? Because it's all about, they always track the movement of the sun and the stars in these ancient mystery religions and stuff, right? But they pushed it back to June because up, you know, in that line of longitude, I don't know, you know what I'm saying, up north where it's cold, they had to wait till June to garnish it with the flowers and the greens. So that's why you see the maypole erected in June in the film. Now, you'll also see the very cool imagery they have of all the people adorning themselves with flowers in the film. And all this is done for a reason. If you research the actual history of this stuff, It's intended to draw upon the magical powers of nature. And this community that they're in, on top of that all, they have these Viking, pagan influences. I mean, they're in Sweden. They use a runic language. And the Viking connection will come up later when we talk about one of the grisly death scenes. Now, when you're watching the film, you'll see that they invert the camera when they pan in on the, you know, because okay, so what do you got here is you got this girl at the beginning of the film. She's very upset because her sister's got bipolar, and her sister ends up killing herself and her parents. And this young lady is in a relationship with this guy who's a total douchebag. It looks like Seth Rogen, by the way, apparently not related. It looks just like him. And the girl tags along with the fella's trip over to Sweden to check out, you know, one of the fellas. He's a grad student and he's doing his thesis on this isolated community. So they end up all going there. And as they're traveling, you can see the camera do this inverted twist, this inverted pan. This is telling the viewer, you're about to witness the inverted sense of reality. This is just like Alice in Wonderland when she goes down the rabbit hole. All the perspectives are about to change. It is truly a different world. Now, and you can even hear the friends, they talk about it. There's a certain part of the film where there's dialogue about how, you know, this community is totally different culture, and, you know, we can't quite possibly understand their rituals and customs. I believe it was after they witnessed the death of the two elders. Which, let me try to fill in some gaps. I know, because maybe some of you didn't want to watch the film, and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? So basically, you got these young Americans that go over to Sweden, they go to this isolated community, and, you know, it's very pagan, hippie, whimsical, and they're like, hey, we're getting ready for this big festival. So they're partaking in all these interesting little customs, and they give you little hints here and there of what's happening in the movie. Like, they talk about the different stages of life, about how the young adults up to the age of, I believe it was 18, that's considered spring. Then 18 to 36 is summer. Then 36 to 72 is fall. And then the woman, Danny, the woman says, well, what happens after 72? And the local guy, he kind of like shows you that it's kaput, right? Like, he's like, you're dead. And they kind of take it as a joke. But then they start the first day of the rituals, the activities, and this elderly couple, a man and a woman who are like 72, they do this whole prolonged ritual where they go up to the top of this mountain and they jump off the thing and kill themselves in front of everybody. And the man, and it's super gory. Not gory in the sense that it's gory, but it's just traumatic, right? And the man, he falls feet first, so he's still alive, and he's on the ground all jacked up, and they call in Gallagher with the sledgehammer, and they take turns bashing this guy's head in with the sledgehammer. And at this point, like, all the young Americans are like, get me the hell out of here. What's going on here? But for some reason, they persist, and they hang out, and they witness some more stuff. Then they... And there's little clues and symbols throughout the movie here. And they do the maypole dance, and Danny, the young woman, she wins the maypole dance. She has the most stamina. She stays in there the longest, and she becomes the May Queen, which traditionally in these movies, you don't want to win. You don't want to be the May Queen. It's never a good ending for you. But in this movie, it has a different meaning, and we're going to get into that. I'm not going to tell you the ending yet. We'll get into this in a minute. I just wanted to catch you up in case you weren't planning on watching this movie, so you knew what I was talking about. So yeah, they watch these two elders, these 72-year-olds, fall to their death, and they get their heads bashed in with a sledgehammer. And, you know, one of the young guys is like, hey, you know, this is a different culture. Maybe we just don't understand it, right? Now, what was curious, because if we're talking about, like, cinematic setup here, at the beginning of the film, when Danny is in her kitchen, you can see it has the black and white checkered floor. You know what that means. It's symbolic of the duality aspects that the the Freemasons utilize on the floors of the lodges with the Moses pavement. It's the reconciliation of opposites, the embodiment of the Baphomet. And the Baphomet is an archetype that calls upon magical forces to cause change in the world. And to further drive that point home, during the film, when one of the members of the village or the community or whatever, he's explaining why the men are wearing dresses to the Americans that show up. And he says the importance is in the hermaphrodite and the rituals that they're about to go through on the Midsummer Festival require the balanced energies of male and female, which is, again, why you see a male and female offered up as the sacrifice for the Sledgematic. It's why you see the women dancing around the male phallic maypole. But if you want to go a little deeper into Baphomet and the role it plays, all you got to do is look at the Church of Satan's website. It says, the goat or ram's head within it refers to the goat of Mendes, which is, the goat of Mendes is the same visual as the Baphomet, right? A symbol of the Egyptian Neter Amon, who was called the Hidden One, he who abides in all things, the soul of all phenomenon, and thus the closest Neter to the dark force which is seen to permeate and motivate all nature. And this magical forces of nature they're talking about, this is what's permeating everything in the film. That's what it's all about. Now, you want to go a little deeper, we can go a little deeper. Because Eliphas Levi was the occultist guy who kind of made the iconic Baphomet image. And if you research a little bit on that, it's based upon his magical theory and has a lot of political connotations in it about this true religion that's synthesizing religion, science, and politics. If you read, I'm going to pull up the thing here. Julian Strube wrote The Baphomet of Eliphas Levi. And in it, Julian says, while it is very easy to learn about the notion of the astral light that formed the foundation of Levi's magnetistic theory, and of course the astral light is quite possibly a reference to Lucifer, the Illuminated One. Anyways, almost no attention has been paid to the actual historical context in which he developed his understanding of the Baphomet. Although it is obvious that Levi related it to the Knights Templar, the actual sources he used to develop the historical narrative in which he located the Templars has not been investigated. This is mainly due to the fact that most observers more or less implicitly accept the idea that Levi was the continuator of an esoteric tradition, who was less dependent on the historical context of the 1840s and 50s than on ancient esoteric doctrine. Now, and if you look a little further into Levi, he was apparently a socialist, right? And let me read you one more passage, and we'll move on. In the 1850s, he re-signified and elaborated this narrative, now identifying occultism with true Catholicism, and at times, more or less explicitly, with true socialism. His Baphomet has to be seen as an iconic representation of this true doctrine, as the Knights Templar were considered to be the successors of the very same heretical revolutionary tradition that reached back to the Gnostics of the late ancient school of Alexandria, the environment where the momentous separation between true and false religion supposedly took place. In this light, the Baphomet is not only a magnetistic symbol representing Levi's theory of magic, but first and foremost, an embodiment of the one and only true tradition whose ultimate goal is the establishment of a perfect social order. Yes, indeed, that's what it's all about. It's about this perfect new world order that they seek to bring about. And look, I'm not opposed to the idea of socialism. I'm not advocating for it either, because the problem with socialism is eventually, you know, you're asking for the government to put their nose in your business for everything to help you out. And then all it takes is the wrong person to be in charge and boom, it's over. The idea in principle isn't terrible. I mean, helping people. I like helping people. I mean, the other extreme is capitalism, oligarchy. The corporations run the place. And it's interesting because if you look at like the 60s, a very critical moment in conspiracy timeline, all the conspiracies were to shut down the socialist, hippie, communist movement. But we don't want to get political here. I'm just telling you what Elvis Levy's Goat with the Titties is talking about here. Talking about magical forces in all of nature. And look, I don't condemn anybody for their beliefs on all this stuff. You know this. I've got my own angle and bias, but like, I'm always open to hear the other side. Could I be wrong? 100%, absolutely. I'm just trying to let you know what they're putting in the films. Because the films, the symbolism speaks to your subconscious. They're planting messages. If they plant enough, they can manifest reality. True occult magic. Now, solar Luciferianism. I said that to say this. Because the allegation is, and this is theorists before me, I don't profess to have invented this. You listen to a lot of the theorists like Bill Cooper. They talk about these mystery religions of the secret societies and the Freemasons. And the claim, which I believe in, I'm not saying with 100% without doubt, I'm just saying it makes a lot of sense to me. And until I'm proven otherwise, these secret societies and Freemasons and occultists, they devote their energies towards Lucifer. They believe Lucifer is the true God, the true liberator of mankind. And what they've had to do is hide their affection for this dark lord behind the guise of solar worship. So anytime you see the sun worship stuff, it's veiled imagery for the worship of Lucifer. And I'm summing up many, many, many hours of lectures and notes from these guys. I'm just telling you the basics of what they're trying to say. They're saying that when you see the solar worship stuff, it ultimately goes to Lucifer. Because they always have these weird sort of this weird sort of language, like Eliphas Levy talks about the astral light. Blavatsky talks about the light, and Blavatsky even calls it Lucifer. I mean, they're very clear about it if you know what you're looking for. And it's always about the intellect. That's another symbol that relates to Lucifer, intellect, because they believe Lucifer gave man the capability to have independent thought, free from the oppressive God. Man could become God. That's what it's all about, right? So, in the movie, you see the symbolism of the sun worship, and at the beginning, you'll see the beginning of the ritual, the activities. A female community leader, she starts the midsummer ritual by handing torches to other leaders, and she mentions how no other light can go higher. And this is a key component in the argument of the solar Lucifer connection, because they claim that no one can go higher than the sun, which is a disguised way of saying no one can go above Lucifer. Lucifer is the real God, which is, I had an argument on Instagram. You can join the conversation too, at Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram. I had an argument on there because Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie are on a concert tour, and there's an image where you can see clearly Marilyn Manson got a tattoo of 33 on his finger. And I was trying to explain that this is why the Freemasons go up to 33 degrees. They claim that the sun, it moves 30 degrees through the astrology charts there, whatever, zodiac, excuse me, dies for 3 days down in the Southern Cross, stays there, doesn't move, which isn't entirely accurate. I'm just telling you what the belief systems claim. And then it comes back to life. It regenerates and moves back up towards the summer solstice, where it's at full strength. So this 33 degrees is the maximum that the sun can go. Nobody can go higher. That's why it's the highest degree of Freemasonry. Because Lucifer is the sun. No one can go higher than the true God of Lucifer. And some Freemason got on there and told me, oh, you're wrong, Isaac. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm not a Freemason. I'm especially not a 33rd degree Freemason. As I would argue, the person who wrote the comment also is not. As you go higher up in the initiation, they give you more, right? It's like Church of Scientology. At least that's what I'm told, right? I'm not in the Freemasons. I have no idea. But the symbolism is all right there. You can put all these pieces together, and to me, it's a very strong argument. So when the lady at the beginning of Midsummer says, no light shall go higher, that's what they're talking about. And to elaborate on that Instagram post, Marilyn Manson is clearly a Satanist. He's in the Church of Satan. I think case closed, right? He's a satanic guy. Why do you think he got the number 33 tattooed on his finger? What you think about that? Anyways, as a matter of phallus, I like to have a little fun with my headings on the website. On IlluminatiWatcher.com, you can check it out. I got images taken from the trailer. I wish I could have a bootleg version to show you guys. And shout out to Skinny Fresh. He sent me a link to a website where you can get bootleg movies, but I gotta be honest, I'm scared. I don't want my computer to get a virus. I went on there and checked it out a little bit and I kinda got scared. Anyways. And not to mention, I know a guy who got a ticket for downloading illegal movies. So I am playing it safe, playing it above board here. The Illuminated is watching me every turn I make. Perhaps there'll be a day where I will need that. So, anyways. The pagan religions, they believe in this generative force of nature, right? We already talked about that. It connects into the mystery religions because they think that the creative forces of nature can be used to practice ritual magic. It connects. It's a power, a generative force. It's like sex magic. They can use the energies released from these things, push it out to the cosmos and cause reality to change in conformity with the will. And there's a man named Mark in the film. He's the basic bitch. He's all he worries about is vaping and his base desires, getting it in, right? And perhaps that's why he's the one to notice when they get into the barn where they're all going to sleep in the village. You can hear him clearly say about how there's penises drawn all over the walls. You don't really see it in the film, but he says it. The penis, of course, is the phallic reference used by all these ancient pagan cultures to represent the male generative forces of nature. And you see this portrayed as the obelisk, right? You see the obelisk everywhere. The George Washington Memorial. What you think it was? It's GW's big old penis. So many large erected penises all over the world drawing the generative forces of male out of nature. And that's why you see the maypole. Again, a big old penis adorned with the flowers. A big, beautiful penis. And the women are dancing around it, the male and the female, to determine who the May Queen will be. And in the village, you will see that the area they're told not to go is this triangle-shaped barn that you find out will be the sacrificial chamber at the end of the film. Because that's what happens. I'm trying to define the right time to tell you about the ending here. I don't think we're ready yet. Let's keep going. And, of course, it is. Let's do it. So, basically, the young Americans are there. They end up getting killed one by one. And we're down to Danny and her dumb boyfriend, fake Seth Rogen. And Seth Rogen gets duped into banging this chick who's trying to get impregnated as part of the ritual. And then Danny wins the May Queen. And then they end up sacrificing fake Seth Rogen along with the other dead bodies and two volunteers from the village into this big, giant, triangular-shaped sacrificial chamber. And they light it on fire. Right? This is what we saw with Wicker Man, Burning Man. Same concept. But here, it's a double, what do you call it, a double entendre, a double play on the male creative forces. Because the upright triangle represents male creative energy, as the inverted is for female, right? And they light it on fire. The fire, the sun, represents male energy as well, fiery. Whereas like the moon is more balanced and harmonious, that's the female energy. So they're really evoking a lot of male energy during this midsummer festival. And why do you think that is? It's because the sun, or Lucifer, is what this ritual is all about. And the sun is at its full vitality, full, brown snake turned to brown stick from Chappelle's Show. I'm probably too old. You guys probably don't know that reference. But anyways, the sun is at its full erected power in Midsommar. That's what it's all about. This movie's all about the big old penis. But it's also about Christianity. The film is a lot like Wicker Man, which is why I wanted to see it. Although Wicker Man's better overall. I got to throw that out there. But it shows this village, and this village is mocking Christianity with the pagan and the solar religions, the Luciferian stuff. They've got ritualistic sacrifices getting cremated in the pyre. Again, it's all ancient pagan druid stuff, right? Now, Wicker Man and the book it was based on, Ritual, the book is actually more clear about this than the movie. You find out about this satanic element of the village. There is also a ritual conducted to call upon the prosperity of the land, which requires a fool to be designated. And you see this in the movie. They kick the fool. Who's the fool? The guy named Christian, fake Seth Rogen. That's Danny's boyfriend. And you can see it in the trailer real briefly. They run in a circle and they kick the fake Seth Rogen. Christian. Now, how curious is it that his name is Christian? You don't think that's done on purpose? It's very obvious. The Christian is the fool, which is what happens in Wicker Man. The Detective Sergeant Howie, he's the fool. He is also the Christian, the committed Christian who dies for his faith. Burned up in the Wicker Man, just like the fool Christian is burned up in this illuminate confirmed triangle. So when they kicked him, I knew that was it for him. I knew he was toast. Symbolic gesture disguised in this Luciferian village. Now let's wrap it up. God, you could have watched the movie by now with all my ranting and raving. It's a clear agenda. Once you understand what to look for in the film, you will see that it revolves around Danny's, the female, her reintegration with a new family. She lost her whole family. Her sister killed herself and her parents. And in fact, you see a little flashback of it while she's in the village. She starts to blend the two worlds together. She has this grotesque vision of her sister and parents dead in the sacrificial rocks where the sledge-o-matic scene happens. And in the film, she actually taps into this hive mind of the village, this collective unconsciousness. Collective consciousness, excuse me. I'm getting my consciousnesses mixed up. And you can see it when all the girls in the tribe are feeling her pain, which the only part of the movie that didn't make a lot of sense is that she catches Christian, her boyfriend, fake Seth Rogen, banging the village chick, and she's super upset about it. She's losing her mind. She's crying, full of grief, which, you know, it seemed like they were on rocky ground already. I don't know why she was so upset about it. He was an idiot anyways. The whole movie, he's just you hate the guy. You want to see him get shoved into a bear's ass and put into the sacrificial chamber. But she connects into this. The girls all feel her pain. Right? It's a collective consciousness. And you see it many times throughout the film. There's this scene where Christian, fake Seth Rogen, he's banging the girl. And all the women in the village, a lot of the women in the village, are naked and they're helping out. And they're all moaning at the same time as the woman moans. And the theater erupted with laughter. Which I didn't really think it was all that funny, but then one of the women gets behind fake Seth Rogen and starts pushing on his butt cheeks. And I was like, come on, man, you lost me. I was okay with it until that happened, and then, you know, everyone lost it. But it happened several times during the film. You see this group sort of emotional feeling. They're all connected, is the idea. When there's a sacrifice, when the elders died, everyone felt the pain. It's the idea that their collective consciousness, all tied to the global consciousness, the panpsychism of the ancient alien movement. This idea we're all connected as one. And you know that these two are going to go through the evolution, especially Danny. She evolves, and you see that with the maypole dance. They're dancing in a spiral. I've talked about the spiral many times. I've got an analysis on Dark City coming up. It's going to go all into this stuff. I want to belabor the point now, but we're going to get into Dark City. You say, Isaac, that movie's 20 years old. Yep, it is. Very relevant, though. Now, at the end of the film, you see the brutal slayings of all the friends as they go around discovering, as Christian goes around discovering that all of his friends got killed. And one of the friends receives the Blood Eagle, a Viking ritual used as the blood sacrifice to the Norse god Odin. Very fitting, considering they're in the Scandinavian territories. Talked about this in Sacrifice Magic behind the mic. I'm going to read it for you. The Phoenicians sacrificed infants to an idol of Cronus, a.k.a. Saturn. Hawaiians held sacrifices in temples called Luwakini, and Celtic druids burned people in giant wicker men, like you'd see in the Burning Man festivals or perhaps in the film with Nicolas Cage called The Wicker Man. The pagan Vikings of Northern Europe were said to practice rituals called the Blood Eagle, in which they'd take a warrior and sacrifice it to their chief god Odin, who held similarities with the Greek god Zeus. The ritual consisted of keeping the victim alert while carving an eagle design into his back and then tearing open his ribs and shoulder blade to form eagle wings before he died. Which is what they did to the one guy. They had this powder that could render someone conscious yet unable to, like, paralyzed. So, now, the argument I want to posit here is that our film shows us this concept of the ritualistic blood sacrifice. A devotion of energy to the deity of choice, which is what you see with Bohemian Grove and the cremation of care ceremony done before the big giant stone owl, sacrificing a child in effigy. It's what they do. It's what these elitists do. The Illuminati meet up every year to do it. An all-boys club, again, the male generative forces of nature. They're out in nature dancing around naked, killing kids. In effigy, of course. Not really. Or so they say. And that was the point of Sacrifice Magic behind the mic, is to say, look, they've done ritualistic blood sacrifices for hundreds, thousands of years. We're led to believe that we're too evolved to do that anymore. I argue against that. I don't think we are evolved enough. I think there's a group of people that believe in this. I think this is the same idea you see when people do these skin treatments with baby blood or whatever it is they're doing now. Furthermore, we could argue that it's referencing Lucifer in this film as the deity, hiding behind the worship of the sun, as we see with the mystery religions. We can support that idea by looking at Christian, the man named Christian, who is the fool, and dies his necessary death at the end. He's a horrible person throughout the film. You can't wait for him to die. He represents Christianity. They can't wait for Christianity to die. That's what they want. Now, the ultimate goal for these Illuminati occultists is, in fact, the destruction of Christianity, as I talked about in The Dark Path. I've got many references in there from, like, Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, Helena Blavatsky. They were not only anti-Christian, they were disgusted with it. They thought it was the ultimate heresy, which falls in line with the idea that all these secret mystery schools are ultimately trying to bring it down. So that's the film. That's Midsummer. What do I think about the movie? I think it's good. I think it's 30 minutes too long. You know my stance. If you can't wrap it up in 90, it better damn well be worth hitting the 2-hour mark. But this one kind of, they could have carved 30 minutes out of this thing easy. I think it was good. I think it was a great follow-up to Hereditary. I look forward to seeing more of Ari Aster's work. Because as you know, I like the horror movies. I don't like that we're looking at Luciferian symbolism. I'm trying to wake you up to understand what you're watching. I still enjoy it, though. I don't let it influence me, as I don't want it to influence you. I'm not saying you can't enjoy a good movie here and there about the old Dark Lord. I'm just saying, know that they're trying to push a message, they're trying to push the symbolism, they're trying to deceive the masses, and they will. I'm going to go a little further, I'm going to say they will. Isn't that negative? It sure is. But I think they're going to win. And I'm looking for you to see through and to see the truth. Because that's all we can do. We can try to wake the masses up, but between the big G and the big Y, banning people like me, trying to keep our voices quieted, they're going to win. They have far too much control, but You and I are hooked up. Let's stay hooked up. I want to thank you for your time, and as always, stay woke.